content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Demi Arsenault from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Lion Magazine. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the September 2021 issue of Lion Magazine Online. We'll begin today with our president's message, entitled Give the Gift of Belonging. Dear Lions, we often talk about the power of working together. We know we are stronger as a club than as individuals. When I became a Lion, I knew I was joining something bigger than myself. I felt honored and excited. I felt like it was the natural extension of my life's work. It gave me purpose and direction for all the good I knew I wanted to do. And do you know what else it gave me? A new kind of family. I come from a big family and a close-knit community, so I was no stranger to the benefits of a wide circle of loved ones. But as I brought food to homebound seniors and checked in on single parents, I realized that there are so many people who did not have the community that I had. It made me see that there are things people need far beyond food and shelter. People need a sense of belonging. People need to feel included. And this is why I challenge you to consider inviting someone you have helped, a lonely widower, or even a young family, to join your club. There's room for everyone in Lions. Let's show people how giving of yourself truly does come back to you in friendship, community, and belonging. Yours in service, Douglas X. Alexander, International President of Lions Club International. Next, we're going to move over to our Global Service Department with a couple articles I think you'll enjoy. The first one is titled, Reaching Rural Communities Fighting COVID-19, and this is from Zimbabwe. In Karoi, Zimbabwe, the COVID-19 pandemic is in full force. But for the past few weeks, the Karoi Lions Club has been working in partnership with the Hurungwe District Hospital to help distribute vaccines as part of the national COVID-19 vaccination program. For much of the past year and a half, Zimbabweans have considered COVID-19 a city disease, reports CNN, with those in rural areas continuing with their daily routines largely unimpacted since the pandemic began. However, all that has changed with the onset of the Delta variant, which has hit the rural populations hard. Localized lockdowns have been put into effect, and a national vaccination program has been focused on those areas currently being hardest hit. Previously, rural areas were not a target for vaccination, partly due to the difficulty of reaching them, reports CNN. Poor roads and a lack of telecommunications made help from volunteers such as Lions crucial to reaching those at risk. In late July, the Lions of Karoi divided into two teams to travel deep into the affected rural areas. One team made the 2.5-hour, 62-mile or 100-kilometer journey to reach the rural centers of Nyagwizhu and Kache Kache, where they spent 7 hours administering the first dose of the vaccine to 650 people. A second team traveled 2 hours in a different direction to reach the Mayamba Rural Center, where they spent 6 hours administering 270 shots. In total, the Lion-led outreach event enabled 920 people living in rural hotspots to receive a first dose of the vaccine. Not content with that, on their way back from Mayamba, the second team took some time to visit an elderly man who they had given a wheelchair to 3 months earlier. They made sure he was okay and got him and his family vaccinated. Leo District Chairperson Chipo Green says her club was motivated to help when they saw the disturbingly high number of deaths of people who were not vaccinated in their community. Our desire is to reach herd immunity in our little town, she says. The Karoi Lions Club chartered in July of 2011 and has 23 members. They have been in partnership with the Ministry of Health for several years now, helping on the Measles Rubella campaign funded by LCIF, the typhoid vaccination, or TCV, program for kids, and the donation of hand sanitizers and detergent to the hospital when in need. Every time they need our help in any program, they call and we are available, says Green. Our next article from the United States is entitled, Everybody's Gone Surfing. No need to see surf in California. In 1963, the Beach Boys sang, Catch a Wave and You're Sitting on Top of the World. Now, almost 60 years later, who would know that better than the guests of California's Encinitas Lions, who have been hosting an annual surfing clinic for the blind and visually impaired for more than 25 years. Participants, some with their families, have traveled as far as 375 miles from Phoenix, Arizona, or 475 miles from San Francisco, to be part of this day at South Ponto Beach, north of San Diego. And for those who don't want to surf, they are welcome and happy to enjoy the sun and sand, the view, and the lunchtime burgers and hot dogs grilled by the hospitable Lions. Roger Oberholzer of Folsom, California, who lost complete sight in 2002, hopes to be one of those who spends all of the time in the water. This will be his fourth time to enjoy the surf clinic. It's cool, he says. I'll use as much water time as they want to give me. I don't mind getting thrown over by the waves. The biggest thing is to learn is that you can do it. People say you can't do it, but you can. Obviously, we need the visual help because we can't see the waves. We can't get the timing. What's most amazing to me is that people come just to help you, says 49-year-old Oberholzer, an athlete who is planning to run the California International Marathon in December. It's amazing that people just volunteer. They give up their time. That wouldn't be possible without the Lions. Lion Bob Mangini, who has been the event chair since 2005, says, many of our guests have never gone to the beach. They don't get the opportunity, and they don't get to be pampered. We've had people here who've never touched sand. The Lions work as chauffeurs, greeting their visually impaired guests at the bus or train station and driving them to the beach, where their day starts with breakfast at 9, followed by time in the water, then the lunch barbecue. The popular summer event at one of California's prime surf spots was closed due to COVID-19 in 2020, but in 2019, at least 55 visually impaired and blind people, many with their families, enjoyed the day. Mangini says the surfers ranged from age 7 to about 70. While the Lions pay state lifeguards and rent the beach space, they partner with San Diego's nonprofit Urban Surf for Kids to provide instructions in water safety. Urban Surf also brings wetsuits and surfboards along with multiple experienced surfers who work one-on-one with participants and safety teams of 6 to 8 to help launch people on their boards. Community surfers also stop by to help, says Mangini, and Lions serve as catchers in the shallow water near shore, assisting people as they get their footing on the beach again. It's a warm, fuzzy feeling you get when you do something like this, says Mangini, who is not a surfer but enjoys the day. They all look forward to this once a year day at the beach. It's California, he says, and who has ever known a bad day of surfing in California? Our next one is also from the United States, entitled Hakuna Matata. Theater in the Park outing gives seniors a reason to cast their worries aside. In-person gatherings have been sorely missed by the clients of the Lion Center for the Visually Impaired, also known as LCVI, in Pittsburgh, California. The center, which serves about 200 seniors a year who are blind or have low vision, shut down in March 2020 due to COVID-19. It was a blow, says Richard Grange, marketing and activities director. People have always enjoyed getting together. It's what they've done for years. So it was with great joy that about 22 clients, staff, and volunteers got together face-to-face for a luncheon performance of the Lion King Experience, presented by the Pittsburgh Community Theater. While the center had been active in helping everyone stay connected virtually over the past year and a half, This was the first time they'd seen each other in person since a Valentine's Day party in February of 2020. The outing was a chance for attendees to reconnect and enjoy each other's company ahead of the official reopening of the center on August 17th. Just to be together as a group meant a lot, says Delois McBride, who's 76 years old and has glaucoma. Blindness is such a devastating disability. There's a lot of isolation. The center plans to resume in-person activities, training, and support group meetings. McBride, who first got involved in the center 15 years ago when she needed a pair of eyeglasses, is eager to get to come back to some of the group activities she'd enjoyed over the years, including eating lunch, dancing, playing Scrabble and other games, movies, and field trips. The center works to help preserve vision, foster independence, and enhance the quality of life for adults who are blind or at risk of vision loss. It serves as a source of information and expertise on blindness. We give older adults the tools and skills they need to maintain their health, independence, and quality of life despite vision loss, Grange says. Whether she has a question about transportation, eyeglasses, or any other issues that might arise, McBride says the center is where she turns for help. The center provides a structure and platform to ask questions and get good, relevant information that can be trusted, she says. The center provides free vision screenings to people 55 and older throughout their service area. In-home services are also available, including needs assessments, counseling, and training in daily living skills, help with adaptive aids, orientation, and mobility. While everyone is excited about being able to resume in-person activities, Grange notes that the center continued to serve clients remotely throughout the pandemic. Starting a few weeks after the center closed, the support groups began meeting virtually, and the center also continued to provide consultation services and other supportive services. There were many limitations on what could be accomplished over the phone versus an in-home visit, but we did as much as we could and mailed out dozens of assistive devices, Grange says. He says many clients are used to connecting by phone and adapted pretty easily to remote meetings. The phone is a lifeline for many of our clients, he says. We said if we could do meetings over the phone, it would work for most people. While the phone was an important tool to connect during a public health crisis, McBride is happy to see in-person gatherings resume. You can't beat human interaction, she says. That's especially important for the blind and the visually impaired. And here's our last article from the Global Service Department, also from the United States, entitled Well Done. In the wake of Hurricane Ida, this barbecue travel team fired up the grills to keep folks fed. Lion Brian Rapolo is serious about barbecue. Look for him on a weekend, and you may find him competing in barbecue contests where he labors over a hot smoker, hoping to produce a tasty and award-winning pork loin, beef brisket, slab of ribs, or chuck roast. Rapolo, who is past president of the Downtown Shreveport Club, took his beloved hobby in a different direction 2 years ago when he decided those hot meals he makes for fun could help people in dire need. In 2019, Rapolo co-founded Giving Back Foundation, a nonprofit that provides meals to community members, first responders, and others in Southeast U.S. after a natural disaster strikes. The idea originated with a bunch of competition barbecue guys, he says. That's what we do on the weekends. We set up in a parking lot and cook for competitions. We got together and decided we wanted to help feed people who've experienced a disaster. Over the past 2 years, Rapolo and other Lion volunteers have responded to 5 disasters. After Hurricane Ida hit Louisiana in August, many had lost their homes or were left without power or water. Rapolo and 4 other Lion volunteers brought their cooking skills to help families recover. Well before the storm hit, Rapolo was keeping an eye on weather reports. Days before, we looked at all the different radar channels, looking at where the storm was going to make landfill, Rapolo says. We made a logical guess that this area was where we needed to be. The eye of the storm went 10 miles east of here. The area is Denham Springs, Louisiana, where Rapolo connected with Christ's Community Church and set up a field kitchen in their parking lot. Shannon Easley, wife of Pastor Willis Easley, says Rapolo and his volunteers were there 18 hours after the storm hit. "We met in the parking lot," she says. "We didn't have power or water. But Brian said, 'Can you give meals away at lunchtime?'" "Yes, they could," said Easley, who turned on a computer powered by a generator and sent out a message via social media that hot meals would be served for lunch. A few hours later, Rapolo and his team were distributing meals of pork loin and green beans to a long line of weary residents that snaked through the church's parking lot. A total of 3,000 people received a hearty lunch that day. By the end of the week, the group had served a total of about 36,000 meals, including breakfast, lunch, and dinner, even making some deliveries to those who couldn't get to the church. Easley was impressed with their operation. "They have it going on," she says. "They have huge smokers, freezer trucks, motorhomes, and cookers. They're a well-oiled machine. They roll in here for a week and work from early morning to late at night. It's unbelievable." Rapolo witnessed the wreckage left behind by the hurricane firsthand. "We delivered food to one area where a lady said, 'This is my house.' And I looked around and said, 'Where?' And she said, 'No, this was my house. It's gone.' There was nothing left there. So yes, we've seen complete devastation," he says. Setting up the kitchen is no easy task. The group brings the food they serve, all of which is donated. They bring it with them, along with utensils, tables, cooking equipment, and any other items they need. For every meal, they serve a protein, a vegetable, and a starch. "It makes for a more filling meal," says Lion Scott Harkey of the North Shreveport Lions Club, who helped out. Near the end of the week, he joked that he was tired, but glad to be there. "We've been blessed to be able to help others and bring them something at their time of need," he says. "It's not just a physical need. It's a spiritual need. We were able to put the church in a situation where they can spiritually minister to these people. That's more important than filling bellies." While the volunteers were there only about a week, until grocery stores and gas stations were starting to reopen, it was long enough to make an impact. "They are a gift from God," says Easley. Next, I'd like to move to one of our feature articles titled 20 Years Later, Remembering 9/11 and the Role Lions Continue to Play in Moving Forward. On September 11th, 2001, Shirley Brooks Jones was on Delta Flight 15, headed from Frankfurt to Atlanta, from where she'd fly to her home in Ohio. She had no idea what was happening in New York, Washington, and Pennsylvania, or the real reason their plane was being diverted to Newfoundland. "We've got a problem with the signal indicator," the captain, not wanting to panic the passengers, announced over the intercom. A small town, Gander in Newfoundland, had once served as a refueling station for planes and had some of the world's longest runways. Brooks Jones, who's 65 years old, and an administrator at Ohio State University, watched anxiously as her plane nestled itself among a row of jumbo jets. Before long, there would be 39 planes with 10,000 passengers and crew members. U.S. airspace was closed because of the terror attacks, Brooks Jones and other passengers finally were told. For nearly 4 days, the plane people, as they came to be called, were housed, fed, and lovingly attended to by Canadians in Gander and other nearby small towns. The local school bus drivers were on strike, but they agreed to ferry the passengers to accommodations. Brooks Jones was among the 100 passengers driven 40 miles to hardscrabble Lewisport, a tiny town with one main street and no stoplights. But it had an active Lions Club with a clubhouse the size of a small gym. Brooks Jones cried when she saw Lions greet them and fly about the clubhouse to convert it into a temporary shelter. She had grown up poor in a large family. Years ago, as a schoolgirl, Lions arranged for her eye exam and then made sure she got her glasses. It was the first time I could see the trees on the leaves and see what was for sale in store windows, she says of getting her first glasses. I couldn't believe it. Here were lions taking care of me again. The passengers had not been allowed to take their luggage with them. They literally only had the clothes on their backs and the shoes on their feet. Lions provided bedding, blankets, washcloths, toothpaste, toothbrushes, hairbrushes, combs, tampons, and more. They cooked lavish meals. They set up a bank of phones, computers, and television sets. There was no charge for using the phones or anything else. These were not wealthy people at all. These were people who had so little, but they had such big hearts, says Brooks Jones. Two lions stood out. There was Mayor Bill Hooper. He was a short fellow with a cowlick and a smile and running all over, says Brooks Jones. His wife, Thelma, was quiet and sweet. When a young girl saw the 9/11 destruction on TV and fell to the ground in grief, Thelma put her arms around her. You can just cry as long as you want to. You're here with friends, she comforted her. When the passengers finally were allowed to fly home, Brooks Jones conferred with another passenger on the flight. A suggestion had been made to pass the hat for people in Lewisport. Brooks Jones wanted to do more. They took care of us for days, she insisted. It was decided to start a scholarship fund for a local high school students, many of whom did not go to college or technical school. The captain gave permission for Brooks Jones to make the announcement over the intercom. We may be down, but good eventually overcomes evil, she told her fellow passengers. By the time the plane had landed in Atlanta, passengers had pledged $15,000. That amount grew and grew. In the following months, Brooke Jones told the story of the plane people to countless civic groups, including the Tri-Village Lions Club near her home in Ohio. When I was finished, they asked me to join. How could I say no, recalls Brooks Jones, who later served as club president. Meanwhile, the Lewisport Area Flight 15 Scholarship Fund has raised more than $1 million and assisted 313 students. Brooks Jones regularly flies back to Canada for the award ceremonies or to commemorate 9/11. She's made 29 trips so far. Nearly 15 years ago, in recognition of her service to youth, she became an honorary member of the Order of Newfoundland and Labrador, the province's highest honor. That honor eventually landed her an audience with Prince Charles, who was very interested in the plane story and the role of the lions. That's hardly her only claim to fame. Come From Away was a rousing Broadway musical in 2017 that recounted the plight of the stranded passengers. It was a hit with audiences and critics, gaining 7 Tony nominations. One of the characters was based on Brooks Jones. In the touring version of the play, her character was played by James Earl Jones II, a distant cousin of the famous actor. The play takes poetic license with some of the identifying characteristics of real people. The attention and awards are great, but Brooks Jones is grateful to the Lions of Lewisport, who stepped up after the World Trade Center collapsed. My life wouldn't be a fraction of what it has been without Lions. They made it all possible, she says. Like many others, Lion Steve Temeroli remembers precisely where he was and what he was doing on September 11th. I was painting the den, watching the Today Show, says Tremoroli, who lives near New York City in Syosset. He roused his son, a college student at home that day. Get up, he told him. We're under attack. The fear of another attack loomed for weeks. We could hear the fighter jets overhead. It was really eye-opening, he recalls. He and his wife, Mary Ann, also a Lion, soon decided to shop and patronize stores as a small act of solidarity. It was about doing something to help the community. We were very nervous. We didn't know if the other shoe would drop, says Tremoroli, a chiropractor. Also, like so many others, particularly Lions in New York and nearby, Tremoroli sprang into action as a volunteer. His service for weeks in the city has been one of the defining moments of his long tenure as a Lion, which began in 1981. At a warehouse near Ground Zero, he distributed masks, flashlights, and other essential gear, as well as food and water to recovery workers. He also volunteered with United Way for Alliance-supported effort to provide financial assistance to those affected by September 11th. People lost their jobs and homes in the wake of the attack, and he interviewed applicants and reviewed supporting documentation. Tremoroli was one of the thousands of Lions who helped ease the pain and suffering caused by September 11th. Fueled by donations from Lions Worldwide to Lions Clubs International Foundation, also known as LCIF, Lions volunteered at the warehouse to assist recovery efforts at Ground Zero and also supported recovery efforts at the Pentagon. Lions funded mentoring programs for children and job search services and sponsored camps for families that lost loved ones. In supplying emergency personnel and volunteers at Ground Zero, Tremoroli was privileged to witness their resolve and generosity in the spirit of the grim task of locating remains. In speaking with families personally impacted by September 11th, he came face to face with the human toll of the tragedy. People told harrowing stories of what they experienced that day. "It was heart-wrenching," says Tremoroli. "I'm pretty inquisitive, so if they wanted to talk about it, they would. Sometimes it was a case of needing someone to hold their hand." While he was district governor in 2006, he and other Lions served at a Lion-supported camp for those who lost loved ones on September 11th. The families enjoyed typical camp activities such as swimming and arts and crafts, but also could avail themselves of music therapy and psychological counseling. "It was very emotional. It was very gratifying to help others," he recalls. Tremoroli was an international director from 2013 to 15. That's a rare accomplishment among Lions, but his service after 9/11, he says, was part and parcel of his membership. "It's what you do as a Lion. It was natural," he says. And sadly, due to time, I'm going to have to cut that article short, but we do have a minute for a couple pieces of club news. So we'll begin with, in Pennsylvania, nearly 300 people attended the annual Lions Appreciation Day at Beacon Lodge Camp. Lions activities included games, a giant Name That Tune competition, a worship service, blind bowling, and camp tours. There was a basket raffle, an indoor expo for pin traders, a 50-50 raffle, a barbecue lunch, and the Great Duck Race. The race began as a fundraising idea by a member of the Little Beaver Lions who brought 1,000 rubber duckies and numbered them by hand. The Brazoria Lions Club in Texas donated $1,500 to Action S, an organization that provides no-cost services to seniors' needs, including meals and rides to doctor's appointments. And sadly, we've run out of time for today's episode of Lion Magazine. Be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Demi Arsenault for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for the print and visually impaired audience. Lion Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. And again, that number is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, and have a wonderful day.